everyone. This is Aiden. I just finished editing this week's episode, and I want to pop in real quick to say that we talk extensively about the Kenosha uprising in this episode, which may be traumatic. Also, there's been more information and footage released since we recorded this, so you may notice I got some of the timeline of what happened on the third night of the protests, the night in which two people were killed, a little mixed up. My overall point does remain the same, but I just wanted to clarify. Also, I attributed a quote about shoplifters to the Kenosha police chief. It was actually the sheriff. Sorry. And, most importantly, we send our love to the families of Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum, the two people who were killed that night in Kenosha, and we send wishes for healing to Gage Grosskreutz. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon Enyart.
And I am Aiden Wood.
How's it going, Aiden?
It's going. I'm alternating between, like, existentially depressed and wildly optimistic for the future.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very good way to summarize things right now.
Yeah, which is a fascinating place to be in. I'm not, like... Depressed, like I'm not clinically depressed. I'm just like have this existential dread coupled with, and it's not usually at the same time, but sometimes it is, but usually it's just wildly oscillating between the two.
Yeah. No, I totally, I think that we're actually in that, it makes sense because that's sort of where we are a bit right now is knowing there's a little bit of sunshine on the forecast, but there's still a hell of a lot of storms to get through first. And I think that's sort of why we have a little bit of that feeling. But I actually am going to start off with a story about what happened to me this morning. And, you know, people who are thinking that we're just, you know, they're going to throw out the, you know, the insults for us being, you know, far left, commies, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. They're going to go,
all of which is true.
Who are going to be like, you know, oh, and you're this and that and the other. They're going to say you're looking for ways to you know, vilify cops. But this story actually doesn't involve a cop. It just somehow, well, I'll get to it. So 6:30 in the morning, I hear yelling outside my window. And I'm fast asleep. And so I hear yelling and then the verbiage being used is get down on the ground. I'm going to shoot. And so my head immediately goes to it's a cop. And I could hear somebody who is very obviously scared. A female voice, or at least what sounded like a female voice. And I thought to myself, oh my God, this is happening. Like outside my, so I was petrified thinking if there's a cop who is, you know, has somebody at a point where they're threatening to shoot them, like I'm going to have to run down there and, you know, and do something. And so I run to my window and go to look out there. And to my relief, there's no cop. It's a couple and another man. And they both have guns pointed at each other. Why should I be relieved? I don't know, except that I thought about it after, as I'm going through it, I'm going, oh my God, I'm relieved there's not a cop here. Because the fear is, if there's a cop here, it's so much worse. Because at least one of the people involved was a person of color. And I'm thinking that, you know, so if anybody's calling, so I look over at my neighbor, who he open carries, and he's on his balcony, kind of like eyeing the situation. And I'm by the way, I don't know him very well. He's always been very nice to me. I'm not a fan of guns, and so like I see it kind of like jumping around in his belt, and I'm like, ooh, but he's always like very nice. You know, he waves at me and he's, hey, you know, how's it going, man? He's probably one of the only neighbors that does that here. And I wouldn't say from what I can gather from him, little bits that I know, that he's a Trumper. He's probably more of like a libertarian type who believes that, you know, and so, yeah, anyways, he's an older gentleman. And so I'm looking at him going, please, dude, do not like get involved. I don't say that out loud, but I'm like, you know, do not get involved in this. Like, let's see if it gets resolved. And he, by the end of it, like looks over to a couple other, another neighbor who was watching, and he's like, should somebody call the cops? And everybody's like, mm-mm-mm-mm. So that goes to show you right now. And it did get resolved. Thankfully, nobody was shot. It was a little bit crazy to witness. But nobody was shot. They resolved it on their own, but it's crazy to think we live in a time where, and I wish that the police officers would understand this. Where I looked out and saw two people pointing guns at each other, and my first thought was, at least there's not a cop down there. And whether you want to believe that that's overreaction on my part or whether it's unfair because most of them are good cops, blah, 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 it doesn't matter. From what we've seen, from the fear that even I have as someone who is very much not in the same risk group as black people, I still am much more terrified of cops than I am of whatever was going on down there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I thought that was very interesting because that was not like something where I was sitting down there looking out the window at people, you know, pointing guns at each other and having a little discussion with myself. No, that was a legitimate rising feeling was, oh my God, this is, you know, because when I heard those shouts, I thought that sounds like a cop, you know, what was being said. Anyways, yeah, so that was my morning. And at 6:30 in the morning, then I went back to sleep once I knew that nobody was going to die. Yeah. So crazy, crazy times. As I mean, I'm so tired of the term unprecedented times, but
yeah, I am. That reminds me of a dream I had a couple weeks ago. I had a dream that I was walking down the street and I saw like two cops like beating a black man who like seemed unarmed. And I pulled out my phone to try and record. I was like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And I pulled out my phone to try and record. And I tried to open the camera app to record, but the camera, no matter how much I pressed, like the camera app just wouldn't open. And like, that was my nightmare. And I woke up shaking.
Yeah.
Cause like it's just such a helpless feeling, you know? Yep.
Yeah, no. And I totally understand that. Yeah. It's, you know, and somebody like myself, who's obviously, I've talked about it here, is a big sports fan, and we've seen how polarizing what happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin has been this week.
Should we like fill people in who might somehow not be aware?
I would imagine most people are aware, but yeah, I mean, a man who was breaking up a fight, a black man in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as he walked back to his car, this is a very, very simplified version, but as he walked back to his car after having a confrontation that involved police, he was shot 7 times in the back. I think it was 7. It might have been more than that.
It was 7.
And the reason why I'm simplifying is I know you have a lot of the misinformation that's going around that we talked about before we started recording. And a lot of that misinformation is I saw lots of people who responded, and that's why I was going to talk about the sports leagues that all postponed games and stuff like that. In response to what happened, is that if you read the comments below them, there is so much misinformation from people who are sitting there going, well, he had a gun. He didn't have a gun. He was unarmed. He didn't have a gun back in the car.
Someone said he was armed with 4 weapons, and I was like, where the fuck did you hear that?
It's infuriating. And he did. He actually told the officers he had a knife in his car, and it was on the, and that was the report that I saw on, it was, I believe that was CNN. And where he had the knife, I think it was on the floorboard, they mentioned, of his car. That was it. And he told them about that weapon. And even the report itself says that was the only weapon, or quote unquote weapon, they could find. There was no gun. But yet, because that misinformation has got out there, and by the way, a lot of people right now who genuinely, I guess, realize that, believe that if you resist arrest, that is grounds to being shot or even being killed.
That's another thing. Jacob Blake was not under arrest at any point. People kept saying he was resisting arrest. He wasn't resisting arrest because he wasn't under arrest. Like, the cops were not coming for him. And then people were saying, like, oh, there was a domestic disturbance. Like, he's a wife beater or something. And it's like, no, he was not the person who was causing the domestic disturbance. He was breaking up a fight that the cops were called to. It was just, like, constant frustration. And, like, part of what made it so frustrating is that, like, it wasn't just like right wing misinformation. There was also like left wing misinformation as well. And there was just, and a lot of it was just like chaotic at the time. And then I had like, so basically like as this all was unfolding, I was largely on the Kenosha police scanner, which the Kenosha is the third city that I've listened to a protest from the cops' perspective on the scanner, on their police scanners. I listened to the Chicago protests, Lansing protests, and now the Kenosha protest. And just the difference in the city's responses was fascinating. And I want to talk about that later. But I was also like reading stories from like black folks from Wisconsin, from the region, about their experiences with racism. And like, it's one of the most racist parts in the country. I heard someone say, like a friend of mine who is from Wisconsin and from that area and actually physically went to one of the protests briefly, that it used to be a sundown town, a town where black people who were in the town after the sun went down would be like hunted or beaten. or run out of town. It's been like a hotbed of like clan activity. And even I live in Michigan and we have family in Wisconsin. And so we've driven through the area sometimes. And my mom, like the last time we were driving around, we went to a restaurant in Racine, which is a nearby city. And she was like, yeah, this place is so fucking racist. Like quietly, like when our server wasn't around. So basically these protests that turned into riots and looting started after the shooting. And it was fascinating because I found out about the shooting about 3 hours after the video was posted and started going viral. And so about 3 hours after that, I was looking at news footage. There was also some things from like citizens who were posting stuff like, this is the scene after the shooting. Like here's like the, like, so I was like looking at a lot of stuff like from the neighbor's perspective. And what Kenosha did, the Kenosha Police Department did, that was like really like tone deaf and like clearly a knee-jerk reaction to like wanting to keep an area under control and not no level of empathy for what that neighborhood was going through. They swarmed the area with police officers. Like I was like, holy shit. Like it seemed like they had every cop in town there as well as other first responders. The cops applied gave medical care to Jacob Blake immediately after the shooting. But you have these neighbors who just saw like one of their friends suddenly shot. From eyewitness reports, like it seemed like from people who were there, it just seemed like the police came out of nowhere. Like, and it was chaotic and they were shouting and it was confusing. And then all of a sudden there were gunshots. And then like one of their friends was like lying down in his car bloody. And so they're viewing the police force as this chaotic, unpredictable, and deadly force that's all of a sudden completely throughout their neighborhood. And you don't know whether they're going to turn a gun on at your child next, at you, at your best friend, at your mom. Like when you have that many police in your neighborhood, and when you saw this very chaotic, shocking display of violence, you view the police as an immediate and intense and enormous threat to your safety and the safety of the people around you. That is a threat to your children, and so you need to get them out. So originally, like, the protest started, it was already, like, they were throwing bricks immediately. They were throwing, like, bottles. They were, like, lighting fires immediately. But, like, it seemed like the primary purpose of those initial protests was just to get the police out of their neighborhood, which I think is very justifiable. And people will say, like, oh, like, why are they rallying around Jacob Blake? He was a flawed person, or, like, he should have obeyed the cops' orders. But, like, when you're, like, in that, like, place as one of those neighbors, like, you don't, it's not about, like, choosing to rally behind a particular name or a particular hashtag. Like, people were saying, like, I can't believe the left chose George Floyd, like, Fentanyl Floyd. No, it's, like, it's because, like, this is, like a sudden and shocking death, and like the immediate protests start from the people around the death who feel physically unsafe by the presence of police. And when you feel physically unsafe by the presence of police in your neighborhood, when there's so many of them, like what are you supposed to fucking do except like get them out by any means necessary, whether it's throwing bricks and making them feel unsafe. So they got the police out of their main neighborhood, the police retreated, but then the police came back with tear gas and started gassing the neighbors in their neighborhood. And that's when it really started to get out of control. Again, this is from my perspective, and there was a lot of information. I was mostly listening to the police scanner, so I don't have a record to go back to unless I was submitted a Freedom of Information Act request, which could take days, weeks to get approved, and that would cost money. So this is all based on memory, basically, and like my tweet threads and other people's tweet threads from the scanner. Anyways, so then the protests started getting more intense and more chaotic, because it wasn't just about the immediate safety, it was also this fury at the tear gas, at like the grief. At this point, you don't know if Jacob Blake is going to live or not. He wasn't out of intensive care, like he could have died at any second. And I don't know what would have happened if he had died. Like that would have been, and something else we haven't even mentioned yet is that he was shot in front of his kids. Mm-hmm. People were saying, oh, he shouldn't have gone into his car when police were shouting at him. We can't even, in the video, can't even hear what the police are saying. And like eyewitness reports said, it was chaotic and it was hard to understand what was going on and confusing and scary. So I don't know like what they expect him to do, but he was reaching into his, or opening his car door and leaned into his car to check on his kids. He had three kids in the car. And so that was another factor going on. So imagine like the justified anger you feel on behalf of those kids who've just had their lives traumatized. And so then they began setting fire to parts of the city. setting fire to car dealerships, to mattress stores, to the courthouse, to a probation office. This happened over, like, not just that night, but also the night after, setting fire to a lot of shit and started looting a lot of stuff, including a mattress store. And there was footage of people, like pulling mattresses out of the mattress store and looting huge mattresses, like bulky, heavy mattresses, and like physically dragging them away, like on foot. And I saw people talking about those, that looting, like, oh, like people will say like they loot for like necessities, but they're just stealing mattresses. And I want to like bring folks' attention to a tweet thread by @Freya_Hayes. That's @FREYA_HAZE. So I'm just going to read you a tweet thread. I used to live in Uptown Kenosha. I'm not surprised by the Kenosha riots. The homeless population was being helped for years by a group in the area called First Steps. Some of y'all might remember seeing all the homeless folks in the area sleeping in tents outside there. For a while, up until the city government decided to shut First Steps down because one alderman didn't want to see homeless people in their district, it was more important for them to put the homeless population out of sight than it was to help them. If an officer is called to a situation where a homeless individual is involved, they now are instructed to bring that homeless individual to the outskirts of town to the job center, which has no resources for the homeless population, instead of bringing them to First Steps. The last grocery store in Uptown, Pick and Save, shuts down. The people in the area couldn't afford to buy groceries frequently enough to keep their last grocery store open. Now everyone in Uptown is forced to buy food at gas stations and other convenience stores. Fast forward. Bedbugs become a rampant issue in dwellings uptown. Landlords refuse to pay for the cost of extermination or completely ignore the existence of the pests, leading to further spread of the problem. Around the same time, Andrews Staffing, the closest agency to Uptown, moves to a new location out of reach for the residents of the area looking for work who don't have a car. Those who make the long walk to the staffing agency now are told that Andrews Staffing doesn't provide transportation to or from work, leaving individuals stranded with no money, no transportation, no valid housing options, no programs to help those in need, no groceries, and no clean water, as there are often lead pipes here. Firefighters in this area even state that the pipes are old and pressure is spotty when they try to put fires out. I lived in Uptown. This was my home, and to me it still feels like home despite how horrible it was. The people cared about each other and did their best to help each other out no matter what. We shared what we had to keep each other surviving because you had to come together as a community, or you were going to be the next nameless dead body some kid is poking at. That's not even a metaphor. I found a dead man leaned up against the subway next to Chen's Bistro. If y'all were living there, you know what I'm saying. Point I'm getting to is if you don't get why Kenosha riots have set the city on fire, it's because you don't know what the fuck the people in Uptown have been living through. Everyone was treated like criminals. No one had a good way out unless they found a good hustle, and those who are left have nothing left to lose. Try sleeping on your floor with no AC in the hottest part of summer. No hope of a job. And the knowledge that the only place you can go for food will give you a loaf of bread a day and a week's worth of food once a month, and tell me what you would do to try to change it. You've got bed bugs biting out your whole body. Your stomach feels like it's stabbing you. Your body aches from the hard floor. Tell me then how you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I got out because I was lucky. I found help. Not everyone got to be so lucky. And then they shared some photos from Kenosha from their time living there.
Well, that's an extremely important thread, just based on the fact that I have no idea. I've never been to that part of the country, and I've never even witnessed that sort of life at all.
Yeah, that level of poverty. What struck me is like reading about like the people who like how many people like sleep on the floor because they can't afford to get a mattress and have no way of getting a mattress, and like then like the looting of a mattress store and the subsequent burning of it once it was looted makes a hell of a lot of sense because right. And like they said, they have nothing left to lose, and like the person said, like it's an area where you have nothing except your neighbors. You know, you have nothing in the world except for the support your neighbors can provide to you. And the police gunned one of their neighbors down in front of his children. Right. And yeah, the riots make a hell of a lot of sense.
And, what, yeah,
and I don't and really care because, sorry, I'll get, I just don't really care. I don't really give a fuck. You can show me all of the crying white middle-class people, like, sobbing because, like, their business got burned. Like, in an area, like, with some of the most extreme, like, racial segregation in the country, an area that's been a hotbed of Klan activity, an area where the police chief, a few years ago, about 2 years ago, was, said in a press conference that he thought that shoplifters should be sent away into a dark hole for life for shoplifting. And you didn't do anything about it. Like, while your neighbors are clearly suffering under immense poverty. So I don't give a fuck about, like, your tears or your little, like, restaurant or whatever. It's just frustrating. Okay.
And that, well, no, and that's actually, that's another good point. It's something I was mentioning earlier. But what I want to get back to as well is when it comes to when we talk about why did the left, which is, that's annoying in itself, but why did the left hitch their wagon onto George Floyd? Why are they protecting Jacob Blake? And it's astounding to me, the same people who say that it's all about the Constitution, about upholding the law, et cetera, that they seem to think that somebody's past dictates how they are treated in the present. And I mean, my gosh, I even saw, and this was not even a right-wing outlet. There was, I don't want to say for sure it was CNN, but it was something along those lines, where they talked about Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, I believe it was, who and his past that was had its run-ins with the law, as if that was supposed to somehow justify that officers went into her place of living and shot her while she was asleep. That's the narrative we keep trying to spin. Is it? And what I would beg of people who are trying to spin that narrative is, please look at your family members, look at your friends, see what their past has been, and please tell me if you don't have that one friend or those two friends or family members who have been arrested for DUI, who have been arrested for maybe shoplifting when they were younger. Go down the list of possible things that they might have had run-ins with the law, and tell me if that justifies them being shot later on in life because they weren't perfect. Because I have family members, I have friends who have had run-ins with the law. I don't think that they deserve to be shot because that justifies because they have some sort of criminal.
Yeah.
It literally doesn't matter what their past is. It has nothing to do with what happened in either of these cases, whether it be George Floyd and Jacob Blake, or what happened in Arizona, what happened in, you know, go around the whole list. Police brutality in general disproportionately, of course, affects the Black community. But it also is a problem that is, and it's amazing to me because the first response, and there was a tweet that I actually retweeted, but I was talking about this before I actually saw the tweet, which was about this woman who said, she goes, it's amazing to me that the first thing white people say is, well, white people get shot by police too.
And why are you not angry about that? Yeah, why are you not fucking rioting in the streets, white people?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm
yeah.
so frustrated.
But that's where it comes down, is what you were talking about when you say the people who are sad about their small businesses, right, and whatnot. It's because they have this mentality, they're so desensitized to violence. They have this mentality that they worked hard to have a house, to have a savings account, and to literally not get killed by police. That's what they feel. They now have that sort of privilege because they've been told, and that comes down to so many different toxic mentalities in this country, whether it be a toxic work mentality, a toxic, obviously systemic racism that has continued to be such a terrible thing.
Also, I want to talk a little bit later about, like, some of the calls I've gotten with the eviction defense hotline, because I feel like it relates to the whole, like, well, I worked hard, and it's just, it's yeah, frustrating. Anyways.
It's frustrating to me because when I hear these things and I see there being any sort of pushback, you would think that we would rally around each other, because like I've put it this way. When you look at how it disproportionately affects the Black community, their house is on fire. We've seen we've heard a metaphor similar to this, right? But the rest of our houses, and some worse than others, are leaking. The roof is leaking, right? The good news is that by putting out the fire that is happening right now with the black community and how police brutality is disproportionately affecting them, our roofs get fixed in the process. Like, it's something that helps all of us, but this goes into every single thing we talk about. Medicare for all. It's literally something that helps everybody. But the people who have it coming out of their paycheck right now are like, well, the people who aren't making a big enough paycheck don't deserve to be healthy. That's the mindset right now, is that somehow you don't deserve humanity because you haven't had to go through what they believe they've gone through. And it takes on so many different heads. The monster has so many different heads, because then you have the totally rich ass people who have been told by their rich parents that they worked hard to get where they are when they've literally been lifted there by their parents. And yet they believe, because they've been told it enough times, that they have worked hard to get there. There's a great, great interview from back in the, whenever The Apprentice was big, where you see Ivanka and Don Jr. and their father they're being interviewed about The Apprentice, and there's like this stuttering of like where Ivanka says something, I'm paraphrasing a bit here, but it says something along the lines of, I've been fortunate that my dad has the company that he has, because now I'm here. And then she goes, but not that I didn't work hard for it. And it's like this fear in Don Jr. and her eyes, like, oh my God, but you know, we worked hard for this. This wasn't given to us. And it's, you know, that, but that's the thing, is that so you brainwash enough people to think that literally your social status is determinant of whether you deserve to have a good life or not. And here, that's where we are now. That's where we are. That basically that, you know, you have the, and I think I probably talked about it here, and then I know I'm rambling a bit here, so I'll stop. But there was an episode of Black Mirror where they militarize a group of people, and they have these shields that they wear, these like goggles. And the goggles make, so they think they're fighting what the government is calling roaches. And they're these giant, like, alien-style roaches, right? And they're shooting them, and they're trying to rid the city of roaches. What they don't realize until they take the visors off, and they're not allowed to take those off until the end, and when they finally take them off, they realize what they were actually shooting were homeless people and people who the government had determined as not worthy. And it's a very interesting concept, considering that, you know, of course, that's a futuristic, you know, apocalyptic sort of thing, but that it can definitely be, you know, you can find the parallels as
yeah,
to
I
what
mean,
we're
even,
trying to
even in the Rwandan genocide, I might butcher this, I am not really well versed on the Rwandan genocide, but the Hutu people massacred the Tutsi, and they called the Tutsi roaches. It was like the derogatory term when you like dehumanize someone, and like mm-hmm. even now we see like people referring to illegal immigrants as vermin. Yep. It's
yeah, dehumanization is the number one one of the top things that is used to justify these things, and it works, and that's the problem. Is that so many people buy it. And obviously without, it goes without saying, you know, honestly, my heart breaks for when you see, when you mention, especially when you put it the way that it was so well put on that tweet thread, imagine that feeling. That would be horrendous, being in a neighborhood where that is, you know, what you're witnessing and having your life be that way. It's awful. And in front of kids, you know, I remember being a little kid and seeing my mom pulled over by a police officer and being worried because, you know, you don't know a lot as a kid. And I was worried, you know, and yet there was, you know, there was very little risk at that point. It was either because she was speeding or whatever. But I was scared. I didn't know why. You know, I've never trusted cops. And that was a... And so I can only imagine that these kids who are sitting there and they're scared, and then the worst, you know, happens. He is, of course, for those of you who don't know, I'm sure a lot of you have followed this. He is still alive, but it looks like he is paralyzed. Yeah, it's, you know, and it's given a new energy for to the protests. And, you know, there have been interesting media articles and headlines on that, too, which is almost, you know, it's a, you know, for better or for worse sort of thing. And the thing is, it isn't about for better or for worse. It's about the fact that this is where we are. And until it gets better, yes, it will continue to get re-energized every time. Imagine a police officer, imagine being so bold to think you're doing the right thing that you have watched what's gone on these past few months and you still decide to shoot somebody 7 times in the back with their back turned to you after all that we've been through in the past few months. I mean, that's why there's a problem.
And also, like, Kenosha, like it's a much smaller town than Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, a less, like, violently racist town as Lansing, which is where I live. In Lansing, we had one night of protest that got a little, like, chaotic, and the police deployed tear gas. But that was the only night, and it seemed like the police sort of learned their lesson that if they stay back away from the protest, like, for the next couple days of protest, they would stay, like, a few blocks away, like, very far away, and not agitating the protesters with their presence. And so, like, the protests were peaceful, and then they ended up just ignoring the protest entirely. Even in some cases, like, protesters were being threatened, like, by, like, white supremacists in cars, and, like, the police, like, were not around because, like, they just, like, decided, like, we're just not going to escalate it with our presence, which is, like, a smart thing to do if your goal is not having riots. Some places like Chicago and Portland and New York, their goal isn't not having riots. Their goal is control, and which isn't to say that there isn't issues with police brutality in Lansing. There absolutely are. And when I was door-to-door canvassing, had a lot of one-on-one conversations with Black voters in the area about their experiences with police. I don't want to minimize that. I just think that the responses of the different police agencies is really fascinating. Yeah, in Chicago, it seemed more like a war almost. Like, they were definitely more highly trained, way more experienced with dealing with huge crowds and riot events. And so, like, it felt like they were in a battlefield. Like, when I was listening to the police scanner, like, in terms of the directions the dispatcher would give, like, it was interesting. Yeah. In Kenosha, what stood out to me a lot about the protest was how fucking racist the police are. Like, they weren't using the N-word and they weren't, like, cracking jokes or anything, but they would get a call, or an officer would notice, like, a Black man or a couple Black people just sort of standing around outside on a street corner. Or there was, like, one, like, a Black guy who was armed with a pistol on his hip. Wisconsin's an open carry state anyways. So he was, like, hanging out around the train station. And then, like, the officer who saw that was, like, he said, like, yeah, there's a guy with a Black man wearing a Black Hawk sweater, like, going into the police or the train station. And he's armed with a pistol. And, like, the dispatcher say, okay, keep an eye on him. And so, like, they would devote, like, officers' resources into keeping track of these, like, random Black people who were not affiliated with the protest. It was, like, surreal. And, like, they spread themselves so thin. And then the protest got out of control. And by the end of the night... by the end of the second night of protest, I believe it was, like, the officers sounded, like, so, so tired. Like, the officers were, like, literally, like, oh, the mattress door is on fire. And, like, they wouldn't do anything about it. They weren't responding to, like, they weren't responding to any dispatch calls. They were just basically monitoring things. Like, and there was I believe this was the second night of protest. It may have been the first. I don't remember exactly which. But on one of the nights of protest, the National Guard was deployed, and they had two units of the National Guard, and one of the units got stuck at an intersection and was surrounded by protesters. And for, like, it felt like 2 hours, like, the National Guard was just stuck there, and they didn't know what to do. That's the other thing. Like, they were clearly, like, the most incompetent of the police departments I had been listening in on so far. They were like, what do we do about the National Guard being here, or, like, they're stuck. And, like, then, like, later they check in, do we have an update on the other National Guard unit? And, like, they'd be like, they're still stuck. Do we have another update? They're stuck. I don't know what to say. And there was an instance later where, like, they were like, we need to switch all communications to Channel 3, presumably because they figured out people were listening into the scanner and knowing, like, where the police were going to be. So they were like, let's all switch to Channel 3. And then, like, some people would switch, but then, like, other people, like, would still be on Channel 1 and be very confused, like, because they, like, didn't get the message. And then someone would be like, and then, like, then they were like, okay, for some reason, the dispatcher's like, so guys, for some reason, like, we can hear the officers on Channel 3, but they can't hear us, so we're gonna try Channel 4 instead. And I was like, and meanwhile, like, protesters are burning fucking car dealerships, like, it was surreal. Anyways, so, like, that's, like, my little rag on the Kenosha Police Department. But anyway, so, like, the third night of protest is when it got deadly. For important context, there were armed right-wing militias with guns on the second night of protests protecting gas stations and aiming guns at protesters, like straight at protesters. They were also outside the courthouse preventing the protesters from setting fire to the courthouse, which I believe was their intention. But they were, like, threatening protesters, which, for the record, I think is like, cuck shit. Like, I think that, like, if you're, like, taking time out of your night at midnight to go with your gun protecting a gas station, like, okay. I don't use the word cuck lightly, but that's all I could think about when I was seeing that. Anyways. So they were, like, they were pointing guns at protesters, which the Kenosha Police Department didn't give a fuck about. They were, an officer was like, this is all from memory because I don't have a record of it. The officer, like, one of the officers was like, there's armed counter protesters outside the courthouse. And like another officer was like, are they violent? And the guy was like, no, they're just like pointing guns at people. Like, they're just pointing guns at people. It's fine. And so like, but anyway, so like no one died. No one was shot either of the first two nights. So when the third night came around and a 17-year-old person who I don't want to name, I'm just going to call him the murder teen. He drove up from, I believe, Illinois across state lines with a weapon that he legally was not allowed to own. So he was breaking a couple state laws right there and went to join the right-wing militias and ended up shooting three people, killing two of them and maiming another one by blowing his arm off. Injuring his arm, and then I think the arm had to be, lost function because of it. So this teen murdered two people and maimed a third. And there was some video from the event, but not the whole confrontation. And so all of this video was circulating of the event. And by the way, the teen was able to walk free, walk right past the police officers. But again, like, there's a huge history of, like, white nationalist organizing in the area. So, like, that was, like, a no-brainer to me by that point. Right. So, like, the video started after he had already, or people started recording after he'd already shot somebody, I believe in the head, although it may have been somewhere else. So, like, he shot someone and killed that person. I don't know if the person died on the scene or later. Their identity hasn't been revealed yet. A member of one of the protesters, whose name was Anthony Huber. Is that how that last name is pronounced?
Okay. I believe so. I can't say for sure, but yeah.
Okay. Well, Anthony, who was armed with nothing but a skateboard, saw this teen fire into the crowd and charged at the teen, knocked him down with his skateboard, and tried to get his gun away. So that, because he just shot somebody, which I think is a fucking heroic act, and Anthony paid for it with his life because the teen shot him point blank in the head as well.
Chest, I believe, in Anthony's case, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to, for
yeah. I appreciate all the data. I appreciate it. Yeah. And again, there's a lot of information still coming out, and
right.
I encourage everyone to also do their own research. If you want to, obviously we all have like other shit going on in our lives.
Fair,
anyways.
Fair.
So then the teen was heading away. Some people are saying the crowd was still chasing him after he shot the second person. I don't remember. I don't think I saw there was some footage of that. I don't think I saw it. I also heard people say that he was leaving, but then he turned around and started firing randomly into the crowd. And I believe he injured the third person there. Actually, now that I think about it, I may have gotten, I don't remember. Neither, the identities of the other two people haven't been released yet. So I apologize. But the video didn't start until after he had shot this first person. So all anybody saw was a bunch of protesters charging at this kid who had his gun raised, and this one person, Anthony, tackling this kid with a skateboard and then being shot. It's like chaotic footage. There's like a lot of different angles. But people were saying like, oh, this kid acted in self-defense because like he was being tackled by this crowd, not realizing that he had already shot somebody. And there were even people who are like, in theory, left-wing people who were like saying, well, it was self-defense. Like, you can't blame him. And you can't say like, you don't know what his intention was. Like, you can't say that he intended to go and kill people, like, because like you can't ever know what someone's intention is, which is like, obviously no one can ever truly know somebody else's intention. Like, that's not how brains work, but we can still pretty easily extrapolate from the fact that he brought a gun to, like, across state lines that he legally could not own and legally could not carry to a protest, fired into the crowd. I think we can pretty, like, safely say that this, like, 17-year-old kid wanted to kill someone. And that's what his friends his friends apparently from high school were saying that he always seemed to want to murder somebody, which is great. I love that. Anyways, so, but like, I saw people saying that and it just did not make sense to me because I had seen like at least one night of protests in which like the protesters were physically threatened by like counter protesters with guns pointed straight at them. And there was no one who was shot. Like, the protesters did not charge into this crowd of, like, people wielding guns and pointing guns at them, like, at that moment. So it, the idea that they would just spontaneously all start charging towards this kid who had his gun raised doesn't really make sense to me unless he had already shot somebody. And you only see two people get shot in the video, and I knew that three people had been shot. And then people were saying, yeah, like, he shot someone, that's why he was being rushed at. It just, like, that narrative makes so much more sense to me as someone who had seen the way the protests were unfolding the night before.
From my point of view, you know, I'm not, so I'm, if I, like, I'll try not to make assumptions about what, you know, motives were and whatnot. The problem is here is there's such a disconnect about what we think is now also patriotic and what is okay. And he was given all these okays by police departments, basically deemed him a deputy, you know, in quotation marks and whatever. And he was looking to be a police one day. And we've what's interesting to me is as someone who comes from a family where my grandmother, for instance, was driven into bunkers by Hitler's armies and stuff like that. Like the Nazis were and fascists were 100% the enemy. The anti-fascists, which were the Allied forces, were the heroes. And I have this very much this view of that when you like look at the definition of fascism, look at what's happening right now, look at the narrative that Donald Trump has spun and the Republicans are allowing to be spun, and it fits all the definitions of fascism. And so now you have people who believe that they're doing this kid who believes he's doing the right thing because it's instead of it being called fascism, it's called patriotism. And he goes out there, he does this, and I feel he should have the book thrown at him. That being said, I also think that there's this weird disconnect in that we fought Nazis years ago, years and years ago, and now we're supposed to allow them to have a voice. We literally lost tons of lives back in the day, and now we're supposed to let them have a voice as if it's just another political opinion. And that's a tough one for me to get past because I also believe because I have to look at it from a non-hypocritical point of view, right? So I go, let's just say someone had came out of the crowd and hit him with a skateboard. Here he is, who I feel is a little fascist fuck. And do I sit there and go, oh, they shouldn't be allowed to hit him with a skateboard because that's assault? No.
Yeah, even if you think that he didn't shoot before then, and like Anthony was right. the person provoking the attack by like rushing at him with a skateboard, like if someone's pointing a gun at you and you want to disarm them with a skateboard, like
right. But what I want to say though is that even if what should that, but do I believe that if let's say somebody did that, do I believe they should be put in jail for assault? I don't, and the reason why is because I sit there and I go, these are fascists. They're Nazis essentially, and that's what we're. It's always been okay to fight. Like that was the no-no. There was no like that was you are not allowed to be a Nazi in the United States. That was what I grew up with, and so it's really tough because right now we're bordering into guerrilla warfare, and so now when you're now that he's been booked for murder. This murder teen, we all know his name, but I agree with you. I'm not going to mention it here. And
I also just like calling him murder teen.
Fair enough. And he's been booked for murder. And the problem that will stem from this is exactly the conversation we're having here, which is was it self-defense? Because we only have one video, and you can assume all you want about what his motives were. I'm par with what you're saying, but that doesn't matter. And when it comes down to you know, people are going to determine what they want to determine, and that's going to be the problem here. Is that because we're not viewing it as guerrilla warfare, we're viewing it as some sort of peaceful protest gone wrong, we've already made the rioters, in quotation marks, I hate that term, out to be the bad guys, it's going to work to the advantage of Murder Teen. And the so I guess what I'm trying to say is that to me, when you look at guerrilla warfare, I feel like there's a good side and a bad side in this case, right? Because you have the fascist pieces of shit and you have the people who are on the good side of it. But now that we've, what Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and all these people have done by deeming it a terrorist organization, Antifa, which is so out of, it's just wrong. What they've done has worked because unfortunately that's how it's being viewed now. And yet we're only seeing this kid as a patriot who kind of got the wrong idea from somebody. We're not seeing it as a product.
Oh, no, the people aren't even thinking he got the wrong idea. They think I know. Even if it wasn't self-defense, yeah. Like they think that like the protesters who were looting and burning things like should just be like put down like dogs.
Right,
like,
exactly.
They think that
exactly.
They are. Speaking of dehumanization, and it's just like like I don't know. Like the Black Lives Matter movement has been going on for 7 fucking years. Like I remember like when it first started, and I grew up a white bitch in the suburbs, like, I felt this, like, overwhelming sense of, like, wow, like, people really seem to care. There's all these marches happening. People are, like, trying to mobilize. And then, like, nothing fucking changed. And then there's another death, and there's another death, and there's another death, and people keep trying the same things. Colin Kaepernick kneels for peace and gets fucking fired, and nothing changes. And, like, people in Ferguson start rioting, and then Ferguson activists, like, one by one get mysteriously turn up dead, which is terrifying, or commit suicide, and like nothing changes, and like the mayor, like mayors across the city, like will let Black Lives Matter be painted on their streets, and nothing changes, and so it's like what do you expect, and why are you like all focused on like the rioting and the looting and acting like, oh, this isn't the right way to protest. The right way to protest is whatever gets shit done and protects people. Like,
we've asked nicely for a lot of things. A livable wage, healthcare. Those haven't happened by being... If a peaceful protest worked, we would all be making $27 an hour right now. And we'd be able to go to the doctor without having to worry about a copay or a deductible. So, yeah, peaceful protest, peaceful, nicely asking doesn't fucking work for anybody who's, you know, curious. But yeah, I mean, just going back to my point, and then I think I'm probably done there. Is he's the problem is the murder teen is a product of fascism, but it's being spun as a patriot, and that's something that might change depending on the vote. I don't know coming up. It's something that maybe will take a lot of time. I will say that although you're right, nothing has changed. I do want to give some credit to what Kaepernick did, obviously.
And absolutely,
To not say nothing, because we are having this discussion now years later, and now it's become even bigger. Now you're having the leagues, like I mentioned earlier, completely shutting down for a day because they're protesting what happened. Colin Kaepernick is a national hero. And when it all comes down to it, he started something modern, in modern age, that had been silent and we hadn't seen a lot of until he took that knee. And so what he did actually has created something. Unfortunately, much like with a lot of things that are going on right now in the world, before we get to the sunshine, we're going through the storm, and this is the storm right now. And it's very, very overwhelming, and for us, so imagine how it is for actually being in one of these communities. So
absolutely.
Yeah, before we go though, something I just want to say about because I didn't watch the RNC, big shock to everybody, right?
I watched almost a full day of it, and then some clips from other days, and oof.
What disappoints me the most, and you and I talked about this a bit before we started, I know we don't have a lot of time, but the RNC knows who they're talking to, and that's an unfortunate thing because the DNC doesn't seem to. At least I didn't feel that way from the clips that I saw and the discourse that I saw on social media. You know, there's a lot being talked about whether it comes to the pandemic. Biden throwing out certain scenarios that are overwhelming to people who have been locked down for 6 months now, you know, and likely will be closer to 9 or more by the time he's in office if he wins. And the Republicans are hedging their bets on many different scenarios that would be an uptick of where we are now. and they're painting a picture that is much brighter, actually, in some ways, for people who will believe it. On top of that, the part that gets scariest is the fact that this kind of goes along with what we were just talking about, is that Pence comes on and talks about law and order, and I'm sure probably Trump said that too. I didn't see most of Trump's speech, but saw Mike Pence's. Talk about law and order, and unfortunately, is a large group of people, like we talked about, who feel they've made it to a certain part of their life and they've worked hard enough that they deserve to just be exempt to all that. And they think law and order is good because, like you mentioned, the small businesses getting burned and the this and that happening. We need law and order. I've seen the Seattle Sounders soccer team post a picture of the skyline of Seattle, and the first person to respond is, and you know what? It's a disgusting city when it gets down to it because of the looters and the rioters and the fact that the liberals here won't get a handle on it. And so that's what a lot of people see. They want to hear this law and order thing. Unfortunately, what I hear and what is more close to the truth is that law and order means more autocraticism in a lot of ways. But they know who they're talking to, and the Democrats, unfortunately, don't. And that worries me as we move forward after these two conventions. Anyways, what I will say is the one upside that we heard about today, because I do believe that when you looked at some of the swing states after the conventions, they do tend to look like Trump is making headway, and that's scary. What I did hear today, which I think is at least one maybe spot of good news, is that every NBA arena in the country will now be a polling place. After today, they made that decision, which gives the chance for there to be a larger socially distanced area to vote. And I hope that also motivates younger voters as well. And not to mention all the people that NBA players have reached out to and who have inspired during this as they find their way through this as well. So hopefully that does bring a re-energized vote as well as we head into November.
Mm-hmm. And shout out to the WNBA players who
absolutely 100%.
Showed up. I don't think they played their game, or I don't know if they played their game, but they had painted on their shirts like dots representing bullet holes on their backs. It was, yeah.
No, absolutely. It's what these. It's funny because people will say, "Well, it's just a sport," and they'll say it's just a game, blah blah blah. And then some people will even be the other side. Well, they'll say, "Hey, your job essentially is to entertain us," which is really fucked up. Mm-hmm. But I've always said that even when it comes to maybe things. I mean, for instance, the NBA and their test that they've been using for coronavirus. It now has been FDA approved and is now looking like it's kind of being retooled and re-looked at to make it easier for people to possibly test themselves from home, which will make things easier as we go into the fall and winter. But anyways, I've always said sometimes sports leagues are a microcosm of the country. And I think what's really important right now is the fact that, like you mentioned, WNBA and of course the NBA and really every single sports league in North America, the NHL was a day late, and there's a lot we could get into about that, but they did inevitably, the diversity panel in the NHL did inevitably get to the ear of the NHL, who said we are going to postpone games. That was yesterday. But every single sports league in North America made the right decision. It's they made people uncomfortable. I think that's the thing. It's like, I know I've been around PR long enough. Like, I'm jaded. I know a lot of it is an optics issue that the league feel they have to do after one person does it, because otherwise, it looks bad. But at the end of the day, it still makes a large group of people, the ones who we need to make feel uncomfortable, they feel uncomfortable. And it's only a good thing in that sense. But like I said, when it comes down to both conventions, I think that unfortunately the Republicans seem to know their base better than the Democrats do, because the Democrats continue to leave out progressives.
Know their base, but they are not interested in expanding their base at all beyond people who are very politically engaged and already really hate Trump. The Republicans seemed very interested in expanding their base. Like, there's a lot of people in this country who just aren't very politically informed. And the Democrats' constant hammering of Trump is evil, Trump is a fascist, like, we need to get him out, which I 100% agree with. Mm-hmm. But that does not resonate with people who don't know why Trump is evil. And just telling them that he is over and over again isn't going to do shit. But even those people who aren't politically informed, they still suffer from opioid addiction and from crushing like student loan and medical debt and like having a shitty ass landlord and like having no heat in your apartment for winter and like all sorts of things that like are have a legitimate impact on their lives. And the Republican Party directly addressed those and convinced, I think, a lot of voters that the Republican Party and Trump cares about those issues. And I don't think they do at all. I think it's all for show. I think it's all lies. But the only reason I do think it's all lies, and I know that there are lies because like some of the stuff they were saying is just a blatant fucking falsehood. But the only reason I know that those things are lies is, again, because I am constantly politically engaged. If you are not somebody who knows like that for instance, Joe Biden does not want to defund the police and actually supports increasing funding for the police, if you don't know that about Joe Biden, the claim that Joe Biden wants to defund the police makes total sense to you. Like, it doesn't set off any alarms in your head. And I feel like that's something that people don't understand. And I also feel like people get angry with me whenever I talk about how the Republicans did a much better job with the convention at winning voters than the Democrats did, because people be like, how can you say that? It was all lies. And I'm like, I know, I get that. That's not the point. The point is, like, how are we going to win in November? Watching the Republican convention was the first time I felt, shit, I don't know that we can win this.
Right, like, yeah.
I had optimism up until that point.
And there's a good reason for that. The Republicans are appealing to the middle all the way over to the far right. The Democrats decided that instead of going a little bit, and I hate the left to right spectrum, but because that's what we use, let's just go with it for right now. Instead of trying to reach out at least to the little bit more to the left, or at least what that's considered a little more to the left, let's be real. The Democrats instead tried to move right. They had John Kasich speak at the DNC. They had the Lincoln Project speak at the DNC. Go down the list. They decided we're going to find that small group of people who are conservatives who are done with Donald Trump, and we're gonna try to really make him feel bad about that, and make the voters think, well, hi, yeah, John Kasich doesn't like Donald Trump, so oh by golly, I'm gonna start voting Democrat now. And instead, they did that, and they didn't move left at all. In fact, they continued to shun progressives. Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar were not there. AOC, they had no choice, let's be real. They had to, and AOC only spoke for 40 seconds because she was a symbolic endorsement of Bernie Sanders. And so they completely disregarded the progressive movement that, let's be real, has scare the shit out of them a few times when it comes to their, you know, neoliberal candidates like Hillary Clinton and now Joe Biden. It's frustrating.
And even I post about this on Twitter, but like even beyond the left-right spectrum, like ultimately what the quote-unquote like far left of AOC and Bernie and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, like their strategy is at its core like similar to Trump's strategy without lying. But their strategy is let's listen to voters' needs and try to address those needs and represent those issues because we are their representatives that they elected to make their lives better. Now, like, I think that that group is like really legitimately interested in making those people's lives better, their constituents' lives better. I don't think Trump gives a single flying fuck. He does not care that 180,000 people are dead from coronavirus. He's like, yeah, it happens, whatever, who gives a fuck? Like, he just doesn't care. But he'll pretend like he cares as an electoral strategy. And as an electoral strategy, whether or not, like, you actually care, like, convincing voters that you want to represent their interests should not be a controversial political strategy. And yet it's often painted as, like, oh, it's populism. They're just trying to appeal to the uneducated masses. And it's like, no, I think that that's actually a good idea. Maybe if we just emphasize voters' needs and how we want to respond to them instead of whatever the fuck you're doing, you might be a little more successful.
That's the issue with the left to right spectrum too, is because we've determined that Bernie is far left and Ed Markey is, you know, full left, and Rashida and Ilhan. But the truth is that actually, if you really do honestly look at their voting record, you know, Bernie is, he wants people to be healthy and have healthcare. Like, that's literally the most radical thing that they can find on Bernie. You know, on other things, even with like gun control and stuff, he's actually closer to the center than a lot of the neolibs. And so it's the problem is that you didn't expand out to the people who are the everyday person. And that's really, really rough, because we know that where Bernie was big, if we're going to go away from politics and instead by just lifestyle, we know where Bernie was big was in the more rural areas, and who was amongst farmers and the Rust Belt and that sort of thing.
And also among Latino populations, right, who are often a lot more conservative than you think they are.
Mm-hmm. And so you disregard that, and you instead go toward what is a more elitist group of people. And the issue that comes in there is exactly what you said, is that Republicans might not mean what they say, but they're reaching out to the people who are in that Rust Belt and who do lean more conservative personally. Because, you know, you can be personally conservative about things and socially liberal. You can say, I will never have an abortion, but understand that it's okay if somebody else has that right. You can say, I don't believe in this, that, and the other when it comes to, you know, a liberal policy, but I do believe in it for society. But if you get to those people before, you know, who have already that little bit of the conservative mindset, and they're on the fence because they don't like that the Democrats have done this or that, or the Republicans have painted a picture that Democrats are bad for this or that. They tell you they're taking money out of your paycheck for other people to help other people and blah blah blah. You've targeted so many more people, and you've tapped into a voter base that, and it's so frustrating that the Democrats don't understand that. They see the numbers, they go, and they will continue to hang their hat on the fact that Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes, forgetting that the Electoral College is still in play, and the states that the Electoral College comes into play have nothing to do with numbers, zero to do with numbers. You know, at the when it really comes down to it, it has to do with, can you get enough people in those states so you can get the electoral votes? And those are the states that they're sucking. They suck at right now. And I mean, I just, to me, if you can look at a party that lost to a second term George W. Bush, and if they potentially lose to a second term Donald Trump, I mean, you've got to take a really good hard look at your party, and but they won't, unfortunately. They should take a look at it and say, God, we are pathetic. But instead, they're going to turn it on the very people who they need to bring in, and they're going to say it's our fault. They're going to say, well, it's their fault because they're progressives, and they were always going to go against Biden. They were always going to vote for Bernie, and they're going to turn it on us because they never, ever take responsibility for how shitty they are. Mm-hmm. Anyways, rant over.
We are almost 30 minutes past when you said before we started that you needed to end. I still have about three more rants I want to get out, but
my mom is coming over.
Yeah, I know, and your mom's lovely, and you should give her a big hug from me.
She's bringing over beyond Italian sausages, beyond meat, and so I'm like, I'm hungry. I'm looking at my window to see if she's been. I told her, I was like, I'm gonna be probably doing the podcast till 6. But but she's not here yet, so that's why we're able to go on with our rants a little bit longer.
I know I promised at the beginning of the podcast, I promised a rant about landlords. That's going to have to wait till next week, guys, okay?
Hey, I'm always down to rant about landlords, so if that has to wait till next week, yeah. Thank you, Aiden, for bringing some great views by listening to those scanners, as well as on Twitter, as well, the perspectives that I think that brings a very important side of all of this that has happened this week, so well done there.
Yeah. And I've learned a lot because I found someone who is way better at listening to the scanners and sharing information in a way that was helpful to protesters and would not like, when I was listening to scanners previously, I would report basically everything I heard on the scanners, but like, this person's like an expert on like censoring information and only sharing things that are like beneficial to the protesters, not things that would be beneficial to any white nationalists. Like, I learned so much. And I would just recommend, like, if anybody's feeling frustrated right now, like, learning, like, a skill like that, whether it's, like, organizing with your eviction defense hotline, or whether it's dropping off food for a mutual aid group, or whether it's sharing information and, like, coordinating information, making sure people on the ground are updated. Like, even if you aren't on the front lines of a protest, like, there is so much, so much you can do to support both the protest and the people in your community more broadly so that they can live empowered lives. And I just encourage like folks to get involved. I know it feels overwhelming. You don't have to take on everything. Just pick like one or two things, like one thing, like minimum. Like for me, it's been like the eviction defense hotline. And to an extent, like also trying to learn how to do like information sharing in a way that is beneficial. So like that, though, that's like my focus. And I'm like, I'm not worried about what's happening in Los Angeles. I'm not worried about like learning how to do medic stuff on the ground. I'm not worried about coordinating letter writing campaigns. Like, I'm not going to worry right now about abortion or even animal rights or the environment so much because like that feels too big right now. What I can do is pick this thing and dedicate myself to that. And the good thing is there's a lot of other people who have dedicated themselves to those other issues. And as long as we have faith in our community's ability to work together and to care about these things together, we don't have to do it all alone.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. And that's a very important thing, is making sure that, yeah, we, I think social media makes it very easy to believe you're making a bigger impact because it's a broader audience. And instead, maybe sometimes dialing it back into your local community is the most effective thing. So yes, I totally agree with that. Not to say that social media is bad, but it is, sometimes it makes us feel like we're more powerful than we are.
For sure. For sure. And the people I think that most need that message is other Twitch streamers, which is another rant I was going to do, but I will save for next week.
Sounds good. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening to the Conservationist Conversationalist. Stay safe out there, and we will be back soon.